This is the Friday, September 28, 2018 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now are Darren Newsom, Naomi Bloom, Ted Seifert, and Dawn Rose. We're going to kick it off here with a social media question right off the bat. We've got Alan in Minnesota. He wants to know, basically, we'll get to it here at the end, but is there anything positive to talk about, anything at all? He said prices of commodities are down, input costs are going up, the trade war doesn't seem to be resolving, it keeps raining, and I can't get my soybeans harvested. I could really use some positive news. So maybe, Darren, we won't start with
you. Yeah, I was going to start with somebody else.
Nope, next question. Yeah, you know, I think there are some positives. I mean, look, look at this huge corn crop that we've got. I mean, the yields are going up. That's great. It's not necessarily good news for prices, mm-hmm. but, you know, look, we've been out bushelling prices, and that's what we've been doing. So, but longer term, I mean, look at the amount of demand that we're building for corn. That's really fantastic. I think we are moving more to the model where we are the corn growers of the world, and then maybe South America is going to be more the soybean growers of the world. It's not going to be a great transition, but over the long term, I think that's where we want to be in the first place. So, yeah, I think there are some positives. It'd be great to see some sort of rally. It'd be great to get something on E15 mm-hmm. To give us an opportunity to make some sales, you know, and then everybody would feel pretty good about things. But things could be worse. Now I kick it over to Darren.
Don, what were you going to say?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at it from a producer standpoint, you know, the thing that you do have positive is the fact that you've got big carries in the market. You can get a 50-cent higher soybean price out into the June-July time frame. You can get a 25-cent higher corn price out in the June-July time frame. You know, just this week, we weren't that far off of $4 on the July corn. So, I mean, there's opportunities, you know, after a 22-cent rally. So I think they'll come again. So, yeah, I think make sure you use the carries to your advantage, the basis to your advantage, and those are your pluses.
How far in advance, we talked a little bit about this in the show, talking about marketing in our 2019 year, how much of your crop would you market when you can't, I mean, at this point in time, you don't know how many acres you're going to plant, what your yield is going to be, how much of your crop would you be marketing that far ahead?
Well, I mean, I think with the marketing tools that you have, you can get pretty aggressive, you know, particularly at these prices. I mean, just this week, you could have bought 4 or 4.10 December 19 corn puts. You sort of could have sold $5 calls, and you could have sold 3.50 or 3.60 puts below it. So you could have a big window. I mean, do you think you can hit a target between 3.50 and 5 and have insurance at 4 to 4.10? You had that opportunity this last week.
Hmm. Good point.
Yeah, generally speaking, we have guys about 25% sold by the mm-hmm. time we get to the end of a calendar year for new crop. Mm-hmm. I think this year, especially on soybeans, we'd like to see guys closer to about 45%. But then again, like we were talking about in the regular portion of the show, soybeans are something that we always want to have upside potential for. So, again, I'd rather lay off the risk of the physical. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to get the prices locked in, and then I don't mind coming in and spending a little bit of money to have re-ownership in order to sustain or take part in a rally if we're going to get one. But I think, you know, making sales and being up to 45% sold, that way, you know, you can leave a little room for, you know, acreage adjustments and things like that. But I think we need to be a bit more aggressive this year.
We talked about soybeans in the main portion, and I think that's still kind of the elephant in the room that a lot of producers are interested in hearing about. We've been seeing some sales from Argentina and Brazil go to China, and now they're coming to the U.S. to kind of replenish those stocks. What's that going to do for the U.S. bean market? Is that going to add some support?
I think the answer is I don't know. And the reason is because, yeah, it's great to keep our product moving. But one thing I've been reading recently is regarding soybean meal and soybean demand mm-hmm. in China, they're going to start putting their hogs on a diet.
Right.
So this is separate of the African swine flu or African swine fever. But if they take a 20% feed ration and then take it down to 12%, that actually decreases 27 million metric tons of demand. So we usually export to them 36 million mm-hmm. metric tons. But now you have something where it maybe wouldn't just be the United States suffering. It is the soybean product itself losing out on 27 million metric tons, which is, you know, almost nearly half of what we would export anyway. So that makes me fearful. And there's a lot of uncertainty yet that we can't even count on.
Comprehend at this point.
Yeah, comprehend, absolutely.
So I would say that that's the long-term plan for China. And I think they'll potentially get there if things don't get better for us in our trade relations. But at least just for this coming year. You know, I think they can maybe cut back their crush demand to where they were, not last year, but the year before. right around the 88 million metric tons. Mm-hmm. Currently, the USDA's got them at 93.5. So that's another 5.5 million metric tons they can cut back.
Yep.
And I'm just looking for this next marketing year. If you take that out of the Chinese crush and you take that out of their imports, you know it's not coming. You know we're not subtracting from Brazilian exports or Argentinian exports. That's coming directly off of us.
Right.
So I think there's a very clear path for soybeans to see a billion bushel carryover this year.
Potentially.
I think we're going to be there unless something gets done.
Think about what you just said there, Ted.
Yeah.
Billion bushel carryover. Isn't that something? It's crazy.
It's crazy,
but it's wouldn't it be something if that happened?
Yeah.
Scary.
Yet I still don't think that's the worst stocks to usage ratio we've ever seen in soybeans.
Depending on what the final demand number is, but if we lose that 5.5%, if it does come from the bulk of the United States.
Right.
Because we already saw this last year, we saw ending stocks to use go back up into double digits, mm-hmm. according to the mm-hmm. quarterly stocks report at the end of September. Now is 10% plus going to be the norm after spending years below 10%? So now it looks like, what you're saying, and I agree with, so we're going to start building this and we're going to see higher and higher ending stocks to use numbers. And economics would say, even though I usually argue with them, that the higher the ending stocks to use, the lower the price. In this case, I think it's a pretty valid argument.
My experience tells me that low prices cure low prices. And we look at things and they change pretty fast. And I mean, we're always one weather period away from just major changes in the market. I remember 83 when it was, do or die. We were in an ag depression. The prices mm-hmm. would never come back. The government came up with a PIC program. We had a drought and we had prices move back to, the highest we've been in years. So, I wouldn't give up on the market at these levels, but I would keep my eyes open for opportunities.
Yeah. Do you guys see us being in a cycle similar to the 80s? Have we hit that point yet?
I think we're back to the low-cost producer, and I think the United States is the low-cost producer. I mean, all things equal, and I think that's what the government's trying to do. So we'll find out if South America can produce at the levels we can. We'll find out if Russia can, if Europe can. My bet is I don't think they can, and I don't want to see a set-aside type like we had in the 60s. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see a PIC program like we saw in the 80s. I would say, this is game on. Let's see who's low-cost producer, and I think it's us.
But if we're I agree with you, Don, that we could be the low-cost producer, mm-hmm. but if we have trade, I'm not going to call them wars, but trade spats with everybody who might be a potential buyer, it doesn't matter if we're the low-cost producer because they're going to buy, mm-hmm. they're going to go somewhere else.
Or are they going to? What we found so far is this whole thing has been displaced. And if you really look at the government's numbers, we're talking about how many exports we're going to lose. If you look at it, the government says we're going to lose 70 million. That's not that many.
No.
So they're telling us right there that we're being displaced.
Well, 70 million year over year, but they've cut 250 million of
the but not like the scary. But
it's not like the scary.
Right. I think that's understating what the reality is. Like we were talking about earlier, 5.5 million. I think that's still coming down, maybe 200 million bushels. So.
Let's go beyond the make-believe world of what the government's telling us, and focus on what the market's telling us. It's telling us something completely different. I mean, it's telling us that this thing's long-term bearish.
Yeah.
And to me, I don't care what USDA says, as you all know. I've said it so many times. I would rather see what the market's saying. And when you look, as you were mentioning, the strong carries we've got in the forward curves for both corn and soybeans and wheat, I'm glad you didn't ask me the first question. Point to something bullish in all of that. There isn't anything. From a supply and demand point of view, there's nothing out there.
Maybe we're going to see biodiesel demand increase. Oh. Maybe there'll be those types of things
might
where
use a
low prices.
Full.
Well, this isn't going to happen really that quick, but I mean, we are on a growth pattern from consumption because we're 7.6 billion people and we're mm-hmm. going to 9 billion plus over time. So, I mean, that's not going to cure them short term, but long term, we're going to have to produce more.
We had the announcement this week of the potential negotiations for a bilateral trade deal with Japan.
Yeah,
what market? I mean, how much of the market support would that add?
Let's not change from soybeans quite yet. The only way to grow domestic consumption for soybeans is to increase crush. And we're going to offer, the market's going to offer really record crush margins for an extended period of time. So it'd be great to see our crush capacity grow. But, crushers don't really want to kill their golden goose. I mean, they don't want to cut that. And the question is, can we sustain, or can the market sustain that much more meal production? But I'm going to say it would be a lot easier for us to open our export markets to more meal than more soybeans. We can't really sell more soybeans to countries that don't have the crushing facilities to make the products. So I would love to see us increase our crush here domestically and do the value add here in our country, because I think there's a lot more opportunities for us to expand our soybean meal exports. So over a period of time, and this is a longer period of time, I think that's an opportunity that has presented itself to us. And I think ultimately it'd be great to say, hey, China, we're using our own beans. We don't have the exports there for you as much anymore. So, you know, hopefully that is what comes around. And I know I've said it before, and I'd like to see some sort of incentive program to help facilitate that and push that along. But even without that, the markets are offering some really fantastic profit margins for crushers right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go back to that question, though, about Naomi. I know you follow a lot of geopolitics and global trade issues or events. What does this Japan or potential Japan do for beef markets and other commodity markets?
It just continues to be helpful. It keeps the market to have some underlying support in that way. We have a deal that went through with Taiwan also with soybeans. Just little bits that add up. That's my thought.
Darren?
I don't think it makes a bit of difference, because we've seen this game before. You know, the administration releases, oh, yeah, we're close to a deal here, we're close to a deal there. They're coming around. They're going to agree with us on this and this and this. What happens in the end? It all blows up. We tweet something, we say something, and it all blows up. Until we have a signature on this Japan deal, I don't look at it as supportive at all. I mean, it's just more noise. What we're supposed to do is ignore the noise. This is just noise that needs to be ignored for now.
Well, I don't know if we need it. I mean, our domestic demand is really, really fantastic, and our export demand has been really very good, too. The thing with Japan is that they're going to want, if it were to get done, it'd be very premium cuts of meat. It's certainly not a bearish thing by any means. But I don't know if we need that to happen. I mean, again, consumer confidence is the best it's been in 18 years. As Naomi was talking about, look at the restaurant parking lots. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are going out, we are consuming beef, and that's a fantastic thing.
You know, really going to Ted's point, which is true, 90% of our beef is consumed domestically. And basically on our import-export, we import 10%, but we export 10%. So it's a zero-sum game, just the cuts we export. So this has really been all about the consumer confidence at 18-year highs and the domestic consumption, really. And that's really fooled the market as we're close or in contract highs in the back months.
The other final topic I want to end on, because I think it's going to garner some discussion for both soybeans and hog markets, is the African swine fever. You guys, I think each of you has mentioned something about it. And I was at a conference earlier this week that said if we cull just 5 to 10% of China's herd, that wipes out the need for importing U.S. soybeans. Would you guys agree with that statement? I mean, what are your thoughts on African swine flu moving forward?
Well, it's the combination of what Naomi was talking about. I mean, changing the rations in China, and then also having a problem with culling part of their herd. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really kind of lining up in China's advantage that, well, it's not going to line up in their advantage when they want their pork, right? But as far as cutting back their soybean consumption, it's all coming together for them. So, yes, that is a problem for soybeans, absolutely. Now, what does it mean for pork exports around the world? China is probably going to look elsewhere to buy pork. They're not going to be doing it from us at a 60% tariff, but that might displace some demand back towards us. We've also seen the African swine flu in other countries, too. If that spreads more, then we really have something to get excited about here for our exports.
But I tell you, you've got a huge bet on the hogs right now, because we've just went up 35-40% on hogs in a month. And we've got supplies that are huge. We had record supplies of hogs in the September report, largest since the report began in 73. So we're overvalued. There's no doubt about it. The government's, we're basically $15 to $20 hundredweight over the USDA projections. So that's what kind of fluffs in the market. So it's all about, do you think you're going to have African swine flu fever spread or not? And are we going to go back to the large supplies?
Well, and the problem, though, with it is that the fever can kill any age of animal, and in 10 days, they're dead.
Yeah.
It's not like the PED virus here where it was just the babies. I mean, they are losing sows, and that's a breeding issue. And if that thing spreads across the ocean or spreads any further, you got a whole new ballgame. I don't think it's anything you can just continue right now, but it's nothing to make us rally immediately, but you got to keep an eye on it.
Darren, any final thoughts?
I just like Don's using the word fluff in the hog market because I think that's absolutely right. There's nothing on a good sandwich like hog fluff. But yeah, I think, yeah, it's obviously, I agree with Don. It's overvalued. And if you've got hog futures going up 30 to 40%, what does that mean to me? It means they can go down 40 to 50% because hogs are hogs, and that's just the way they trade. So I think there's a lot of downside risk at this point if we don't kill enough of if the swine fever doesn't spread fast enough, far enough. So I think there's definitely a little bit of downside risk in the market at this point.
Well, it's definitely been a lively discussion. Thank you all so much.
Thanks for having us.
Join us again next week when we'll explore how one nonprofit agency is feeding millions with food from overlooked sources, and John Roach will join me at the Market to Market table. Until then, thanks for watching, listening, or reading. I'm Delaney Howell. Have a great week.